Blog Talk Radio.
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by Brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag. Bring.
Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this. Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this. Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America. But when did America ever bless God? You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You some bitches, get out and get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for power. You got that message, motherfucker?
Black power, black power, and more black power. All the black power that we can get, black power to my people. This is your brother, your comrade in arms, a warrior in the struggle with you, Sean Kwali, broadcasting live to you once again from the hails and the smells of North America. It is always, always an esteemed privilege and honor to be talking to my family, wherever you may be found in the wilderness of North America. Whether you are at home, whether you are at work, whether you are on the college campus, whether you're in your car, wherever you are, it is our privilege to be talking to you tonight or today, depending upon your time zone, from this platform that we call Black Power Radio. And I have to send you greetings on behalf of our national chairman. That's right. The warrior laureate. I'm talking about Dr. and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. Dr. and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, we are sending you greetings on his behalf of black power, peace, and blessings of Hotep and Assalamu Alaikum. We're sending the blessings to you, dear family, who are listening. And we want to also extend greetings to you of black power from the whole entire New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, all of the chapters that are listening, all of those that are on board to make war with the beast. We send you greetings tonight or today, depending upon your time zone. And as you have read, intelligently read, you read the title. It says The Death and Destruction of J. Edgar Hoover and COINTELPRO in 2010, The Death and Destruction of J. Edgar Hoover and COINTELPRO in 2010. And no, that is not a catchy title just to grab your attention. That is something that is real. And, you know, for those that are the wisecrackers, they'll say, well, you know, J. Edgar Hoover's already dead. What do you mean? We're talking right now about a system that this man put in place and that he organized some time ago that still exists today. I don't care what they say on the news or in the newspapers or what their quote-unquote official story is, the program is still very much operational. It is still in effect. It is still in working order, working condition, and there will be things that come out 20 years, 30 years, 40 years down the road that, you know, it'll be just like what came out, you know, on the Panthers or on Ram or on CORE, on the Nation of Islam, on other groups, AIM, the American Indian Movement, and other groups years after the fact. There'll be stuff that comes out from this era in 2010 and on into the future, 20 years down the road, as to what this beast and these crooked bastards doing against our people right now. I had done some study And I come across some information that talked about microwave technology. Microwave technology. Now, what this is, I'm just trying to warm you all up to something, no pun intended, with the microwave. But what this is a technology that, you know, the person who has the microwave gun or the microwave ray, they are supposed to be able to shoot this microwave technology at you, and it causes, you know, radioactive effects to the body. Now, what happened with the attempts of the past to kill the black leadership and kill the revolutionary leadership, they made martyrs out of those who they assassinated. And so, you know, when you had the assassinations of King, you had the assassinations of Malcolm X, you had the assassinations of others, they made martyrs out of these men and martyrs out of the women, and they increased the following. They increased the following and the stance and the validity of those individuals' points. And so they found it not wise, really, to murder and assassinate black leadership in that method. I want y'all to hear what I'm saying. They found it not feasible to assassinate black leadership in that method, in that manner. And so they had to go into a mode called a quiet warfare or a silent warfare. And they began to employ tactics more so dealing with biological warfare and chemical warfare and electro warfare. We'll get off into all of this tonight. But they got off into a different type of war pattern versus the outright feudal stab your man, shoot your man or woman or whatever the case is. I mean, these tactics, of course, are still employed, but they're not employed as much as what you would think they would be, as they were back in the day. So they're into a quiet warfare now, and they develop technology such as the microwave gun and other things that blast at you and cause your body to go into paralysis, cause you to develop disease, cause you to develop cancers, and cause you to develop problems that take you out relatively within a short period of time, or in some cases a long-term effect, a long period of time. I heard Dead Prez say in the song, "I don't believe Bob Marley died from cancer," you know. I don't believe that either. But the fact remains they have weaponry and they have tactics that they use that, you know, to the average individual, you wouldn't even know nothing happened. You wouldn't even know that this person was, per se, injected with something or shot with something. They would just, you know, turn up sick or they'd turn up, you know, dead, you know, something like that. But you won't see the hidden hand. And so all of this is an employed tactic that has a whole lot to do with the counterintelligence program of the United States of America. Now, for those who, you know, may be relatively new to that term, because we can never assume that everybody knows what we're talking about. To those that are relatively new to that term, COINTELPRO means counterintelligence program. Counterintelligence program. And the counterintelligence program, I mean, let's first just look at the title before we even get off into when it was started, how it was started, the funding and all this and all that. Just look at the language, counterintelligence. That means that when the beast was looking at these revolutionary movements and looking at our revolutionary movements, they saw some very good points in what we were doing. They knew that in our revolutionary activity and in what we were doing in terms of organizing, moving forth for black power, moving forth for our divine destiny and our divine creed, pushing forth with the land, with the idea of a land of our own, you know, with our own political education, setting up our own economic basis and all of that, they knew that that was the intelligent thing to do. For you integrationists out there, You're behind the time. The federal government knew that it was intelligent to build a land of your own. The federal government knew that it was and knows it is intelligent to organize and maneuver amongst your own people. They know that that is intelligent. And so if they are trying to maintain their order, then they have to counter the intelligence. They have to move and work against the intelligence, against the activity, against the smarts, against the wise motion of the people. And so they developed a program that was called COINTELPRO, counterintelligence. Now, in this COINTELPRO, J. Edgar Hoover would use, illegal tactics, what we would consider really brutal tactics or underhanded tactics. They would use, illegal and covert operations. And all of this was conducted, by the FBI, by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. They would put you underneath surveillance, they would follow your vehicle. They'd surveil where you lived at, so watch and surveil where you worked at, watch and surveil who you associate with. They would infiltrate your organization. They'd send people in who, may look like they are part of the movement, but in actuality, they may be on the payroll of the federal government. I mean, it just came out. I forget the brother's name. It slips my mind right now. But it's some information that just leaked to the public a couple of weeks ago that a famous black photographer who had access to many famous brothers and sisters of the civil rights era, it just came out a couple of weeks ago that this man was a government informant, or that he allegedly, let me say allegedly for the time, that he allegedly was a government informant, and that he would use his photography skills to get up next to some of these leaders and get up next to these inner circles and use his reputation in photography to be collecting data and be surveilling what the leadership would be doing. I mean, all of this fell underneath COINTELPRO. And so here we are thinking that we just getting our picture taken, for those of us who so much love to get our picture taken. We thinking we getting our picture taken. And we just waiting on the brother to snap the picture or the sister to snap the picture. And lo and behold, this brother or this sister that's snapping this picture is really a federal agent or a paid informant, to be more correct, a paid informant. And they would, just take the finest little detail about you. Well, at 12 o'clock, such and such and so and so goes to get coffee here, such and such and so, goes to do this and goes to do that. They just take the finest little details and make note of it, make mental note of it. If not at times write it down. And they would, report that into the Bureau. And the Bureau, by that type of information, would be able to build a personality profile about you or build a personality profile about me. And so just by using somebody as simple as a photographer, somebody who's into photography, they can build a personality profile about you or I and get a better understanding of the way that we maneuver. And once they understood the way that we maneuver, then they would work on the counterattack. I hope y'all are following what I'm saying. This is really important for today's time. And so once they did the surveillance, and once they did the infiltrating, then they would work on discrediting. Now, this is something that the New Black Panther Party, we face all the time, especially with dealing with the propaganda machine, is discrediting. Anytime that, our national chairman, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, does something that is positive and does something that is well-received by the people, then you have the propaganda machine that'll come right behind that and, make up some bogus little story or make up some kind of false report or try to, as they did in the case of Newberry, South Carolina, for example, only, try to discredit him on how many people and discredit us on how many people showed up, And we know, those of us that were there, we know full well that damn near the whole town was out. I mean, if you were there, you can bear witness The whole town was out, streets packed, wall to wall, flooded with people from blocks and blocks and blocks. But if you would have listened to the report or read the newspaper, they would have, they wrote, you know, a small crowd came out or this, that, and the other. And they trying to make the people lose confidence in the leadership of Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, our national chairman, and the organizing ability of the new Black Panther Party. And so they would move to discredit us. And if we didn't have, you know, the proper propaganda that we have, you wouldn't know anything about the actual fact. And so once they went to discredit you after you under surveillance and after they infiltrated you, then they would go to disrupt you, okay? They would go to disrupt the movement. And so, you know, of course, disruption means they didn't want you, you know, and didn't want us in any kind of operation. So the tactics they would use, they would target their tactics and use their tactics, you know, that'd be brutal tactics. They'd hit you with psychological warfare, you know what I mean? I mean, just straight up psychological warfare. Now, remember, they've already built a personality profile on you and me. Already built one. And for those of us that are in the movement today, if you think that the beast don't have a personality profile on you or on me, you are delusional. If you think that the beast does not have a personality profile on those of us who are in the movement, whether you are in the New Black Panther Party or any other type of revolutionary organization, you are delusional. They have personality profiles on us. They surveillance us today. They infiltrated and infiltrate all the Black organizations, especially Black, I'm saying, all the Black organizations. They discredit us and discredit the organizations, and they are hell-bent on disrupting anything revolutionary in the hells of North America. They tried it, you know, with the Washington Post and other propaganda machines that were aimed at promoting the false propaganda, you know, Fox News, or as we like to say, Fox Jews. Fox Jews ran so much about the new Black Panther Party over the past 20-plus months that for a time it was all that they were talking about. And much of what they were talking about was unsubstantiated. I want y'all to hear me. It was unsubstantiated. But they ran it as though it was the actual fact and the absolute truth. And for those of us who are organizers and those of us who are activists, I want you to take special note and pay special attention to what the New Black Panther Party has been dealing with for over 20 months so that you'll know how to maneuver and what to do once you come up and face it, whether you're in the party or part of the Black Power movement, so that you will know what to do, because there is no way that you can work to organize the masses of Black people and you won't face this. And so they moved on their targets with psychological warfare, and they would plant false reports in the media as they do today. They would plant false reports. They would have paid agents. I'm talking about people that are on the payroll, that when they get their checks, taxes are taken out of their checks. They're on the payroll. They would have paid agents sit down and write articles, and they would publish these articles in the prominent media of that day, the prominent newspaper. They would put it in the newspaper, and they would put it underneath an assumed name as though that was actually someone that really worked for this particular newspaper. Or they would send this news story to the news anchors, and they would really present this news as though it was, you know, confirmed actual fact news, when in actuality it was a false report drafted up by the U.S. government to discredit and disrupt the Black organization. Now that's slick. That's slick to use a journalist, and like we said before, to use someone in photography, that is slick. And so, of course, our people, you know, we were easy to lead in the wrong direction, hard to lead in the right direction. And so when they hear these false reports, since it came from the television, it came from the white man, you know, for the most part, those of us who didn't have enough sense We took that information as though it was law. We took it as though it was actual fact. We took it as though it was the truth. And so we believed the false reports, and we became a part of a psychological warfare. They would also forge letters. They did this a lot with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and they did this a lot with members of the Black Panther Party of the 1960s. They would forge letters, and they would send letters to particular individuals. In King's case, they were trying to expose some of his domestic situations that were not at that time known to the world, and they threatened him with exposing this to the world and discrediting him, you know, before the people and shaming him before the people. And they were trying to get Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to ultimately kill himself. Now, y'all have to read the reports yourself, the Freedom of Information Act. Read it for yourself. They were trying to get Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to kill himself, take his own life, you know, because he wouldn't have wanted his domestic situation, you know, to be known to the world. The man, you know, ultimately, you know, as some brothers do, many brothers do, you know, had more than one woman or whatever the case was in his cipher, in his situation, but that wasn't known to the world. And so, you know, in the eyes of the public, it would have discredited him, you know. But that being said, the brother was strong enough to continue on with his mission and continue on what he was doing. But this is the state forging letters to get Dr. King, the one that they boo-hoo about so much now, the one that they're willing to put his picture on a stamp and, you know, name streets after him and give him days. This is the same state and the same beast that was trying to get this man when he was among us to kill himself, okay? And so they forged letters, and they would send letters to different members in leadership, different members of the Black Panther Party in the 1960s. They would send letters to Eldridge and say that, you know, Huey sent it, and send letters to Huey and say Eldridge sent it. They'd send, you know, letters to this one, send letters to that one. And, you know, they in the case of Chairman Fred Hampton seen in Chicago, they'd send letters to Jeff Ford saying that, you know, there's a hit out on your life, and Fred Hampton Sr., Chairman Fred Hampton Sr. is going to kill you. And they do the same and send it back to Chairman Fred Hampton Sr. and say it was from Jeff Ford, all in an effort to try to get potential leaders and leadership of our people and revolutionary leadership to go ahead and take itself out and knock itself out. And we'd be so busy, and we were at that time so busy fighting amongst each other that it would be hard to get any progressive work done, because we would be looking at our own brother and sister as the enemy, when in the actual fact and the actuality, the white man would be behind the scenes, and the beast be behind the scenes, you know, being the puppet master in all of this. And so they would forge the letters, and if the forged letters didn't work, then they would just straight up harass you. I mean, straight up, you know, send people to your job, send people to your place of residence, send people to the neighbor's residence, and ask them questions about, do you know this person? Do you know anything about the activities of this person? Some of y'all have heard it on YouTube where the agents came to Minister Malcolm X. The agents came to Minister Malcolm X and was trying to get him to talk against the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. If you haven't seen it, if you haven't heard it, pardon me, if you haven't heard it, you know, when it finishes broadcast, go to YouTube and click it in. Click it in, Malcolm X talks to the FBI agents, and he had a tape that it was playing and recording that they didn't know about, because he figured that they was going to come, and so he had, you know, the information, and he had the conversation recorded on tape for us to hear, and I guess for evidence, you know, so he couldn't be incriminated. That was wise. But they came to Minister Malcolm X, and they were trying to get him during his time of suspension. They were trying to get him to talk against his teacher, and trying to sow discord between him and his teacher. And so at that time, since there was no media play and the efforts of COINTELPRO had not fully taken root yet, and the jealousy and envy which had existed between the Nation of Islam and Minister Malcolm X hadn't reached its full climax yet at that point, then Minister Malcolm X was still strong enough to stand on his ground and stand and defend his teacher, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You'll hear that in the tape. But the point is that the agents actually came to Minister Malcolm X and tried to get a man like Malcolm X, El-Haj Malik Shabazz, tried to get him to switch sides from the black movement and to, you know, work on the side of the state. This is in the tape, okay? And so, you know, back to the harassment, they would literally come to your house. They would come to, you know, your children's mother's house. You know what I'm saying? They would come to your parents' house. They'd come to your neighbor's house. They'd come to your job. They'd talk to your boss, you know. And if you were considered someone who, you know, was an agitator, they would do their best to try to get you fired off of your job. I mean, we heard Tupac Shakur talk about this. You know, we heard him talk about this with his mother, how, you know, when they found out who Sister Afeni was, you know, and the kind of revolutionary that she was and still is, that they would move against her and move on her job to get her fired, and it would cause them to be homeless, and they'd have to move from house to house and place to place because she couldn't keep a job because she chose to work in the revolutionary movement of liberation of black people and oppressed people. Okay, this is the, I'm trying to make this clear to you. This is the government that did this, okay? And then, of course, you had the incidences of wrongful imprisonment. I mean, there are so many situations of wrongful imprisonment that we could talk about. I mean, the most popular, of course, is Brother Mumia Abu-Jamal. If you haven't taken time to just study Brother Mumia's case, then take the time to study Brother Mumia's case. I mean, everything from the forensics to the way that they said the shooting was supposed to happen, I mean, it's obvious it didn't happen like that. I mean, they say the man shot downward. Say Brother Mumia shot downward into the body, and you know, when you're that close and that many shots pop off, the bullets oftentimes will come out of the body or at least impact the concrete. None of that happened. I mean, there's just so many incidences that you can look at, okay, of false imprisonment. And there's so many of our prisoners of war who, you know, they're not, you know, locked down for rape or something like that. They are locked down because they worked in the revolution. They were working to free black people, and the government forged and made phony cases against them and caused them to be in prison. It's like I always say, Mumia didn't wake up one day and say, I'm going to be a political prisoner today. That wasn't, you know, when he got up that morning and got up out of his bed and did whatever his routine was, he was not thinking, okay, today I'm going to be a political prisoner. He was targeted by the government. He was targeted. He was targeted by the state. And because of the tactics of COINTELPRO, it was easier for them to move on him and move on others like Imam Jamil Al-Amin, who was cleaning up Atlanta, Georgia. I mean, running the dope pushes out and everything, building up businesses and all kind of things, formerly known as H-Rap Brown. Imam Jamil Al-Amin, another who falsely and wrongfully imprisoned. There's so many that we can name. But this all stems back into COINTELPRO. And so if none of that worked, if they couldn't get you through the psychological warfare, they couldn't get you through planting false reports in the media, if they couldn't get you by smearing your name and making fake letters on you and harassing you and all of that, then they went to straight-up violence and went straight-up to assassination. Now, you know, the biggest case that we can name, of course, would be Chairman Fred Hampton Sr. I mean, that's just clear. It is just clear. This is a man who his defense captain, his minister of defense, O'Neill, was, you know, he was his right-hand man. He was Fred Hampton's right-hand man. And ultimately, you know, when you have in a movement like this, you know, this is especially to all of the defense people that are listening tonight. When you are a defense person, you have extra pressure on you. You have so much more pressure on you than many of the other protocols and many of the other mechanisms in the party, because, you know, hey, you are in charge of security measures. You understand what I'm saying? You are in charge of some really important situations. And so, you know, Chairman Fred Hampton Sr., he trusted, of course, as we all tend to do, he trusted his defense captain, okay? And his defense captain was a man who appeared to have proven himself over time. He was a man that when the police moved and vamped on the Chicago office, you know, a month or so before that, he was a man who would rebuild the Black Panther headquarters. He built it back up. He built up defense mechanisms in the headquarters in case the pigs came back in and did some other things. He even, from what I understand, he even was working on building, I think they say a weapon that could reach the pig pen, or what we call the pig pen, but the actual police headquarters. William O'Neill was working on building a weapon, they say, that, you know, could reach them from the Panther headquarters. The point in all this was he was doing that and doing things that he knew would gain the trust of his chairman. Okay. And so Chairman Fred Hampton Sr., for all intents and purposes, trusted his defense captain. And so when they were all together, talking business and whatnot, and, sharing good times with each other and, you know, enjoying each other's company, eating and drinking and things like this, it's normally customary that the person that you trust, if you don't get the drink yourself, the person that you trust is going to be the one that's going to, you know, get your drink. I mean, that's normally how this thing goes. And so William O'Neill was the one who ultimately put a barbiturate, or what's known as a chemical weapon into Chairman Fred Hampton Sr.'s drink. And so later that night, and this is during the cold month of December, I think it was December the 4th of 69, when the police went to move on the place and the residence where Chairman Fred Hampton Sr. was staying at, they already knew exactly where everybody was going to be at. They already knew, because William O'Neill had drawn them a scribbled out or a hand-drawn map of the apartment, of the residence, the bedrooms, and all of that. I'm trying to show y'all COINTELPRO. We're going to make it even more plainer for 2010. But he had drawn out a scribbled version of the layout plan of the apartment, you know, where everybody was going to be at. And so in the early morning of December, when the Chicago PD made their move against Chairman Fred and the other Panthers, they came in with precision tactic and precision assault. It wasn't like they were trying to figure out where stuff was. They already knew, because one of their own, William O'Neill, had already been on the inside, already given them the inside scoop, and to make it even more worse, had already drugged the main leader, the main leadership, the one that was going to give the instruction on how to maneuver and how to defend. He was the one that was going to lead the charge, and he was already drugged up because earlier there was a barbiturate placed inside of his drink. And so as it was told, when they went to wake up Chairman Fred Sr., when they went to wake him up, one of the brothers said he jumped on the bed and was shaking Chairman Fred, trying to get him up, saying, the pigs are vamping on us. And he said all that Chairman Fred Sr. could do was lift his head. And even in that state, the brother was trying to get up and do, but because he was drugged and unconscious, he couldn't come up out of that state. And so the pigs went buck wild. The pigs shot up everything. in there, and even ultimately shot up his pregnant queen, and who was I think 8 or 9 months pregnant at that time, and I mean just shot up everything, and they didn't intend really for anybody to survive, and ultimately even Chairman Fred, they say even after the barrage of bullets, he was still alive and was expected to make it. I'm trying to show y'all something. He was expected to live. And the Chicago Police Department pulled our comrade out of the bed and onto the floor and placed the pistol in the back of his head and shot him twice in the back of his head and said, now he's good and dead. He's good and dead now. Okay. This is all from COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program of the United States government, okay, where they had a man on the inside, William O'Neill, who pretended to be a defense minister or a defense man, a defense captain, and all along he was a government informant, okay, and it's obvious. I mean, we can pick out so many examples, but I mean, we talk on psychological warfare. I mean, the obvious candidate for discussion has to be Minister Huey P. Newton, obviously, a man who started out young, really started out in his young, early 20s, you know, off the college campus, organizing what he said he wanted to organize the brothers on the block, what was known as the lumpen or the lumpen proletariat. He wanted to organize the thugs, those in the hood. You want to know where Tupac Shakur got that idea from, that base idea of thug life, being organizing the have-nots, or those that are, you know, the downtrodden, into a political force and machine and party. That came from Minister Huey P. Newton, okay? That was the base. And so he started in his early 20s organizing. And, you know, when you look at the way that he started in terms of in 1966 until he was ultimately assassinated in 1989, look at the psychological effects that the attack and the targeting of COINTELPRO had on our brother. Now, we don't want to be disrespectful to his legacy by any means, and do like some of the writers do and just call him a drug addict or something like that. That's not what we're going to do tonight. We're not into that. But we're going to say this. We're going to say that they very much contributed to Huey P. Newton, Minister Huey P. Newton's drug use and the decline, the moral decline that he went through over the years. They very much contributed to that. And if you read, again, the Freedom of Information Act, it was clear that this was the target, this was the idea, to take him away from his revolutionary stance and send him spiraling into what they, you know, contended to be insanity, you know. And so it's clear, looking back, you know, in the annals of history and time, that they were successful. And ultimately, in what they claimed was a drug deal gone bad, which was ultimately a hit, a hit for rank and a hit for clout and money. Ultimately, Huey P. Newton, National Minister of Defense of the Black Panther Party, he ultimately was assassinated. Okay? But again, the hand goes right back to the United States government. Okay? And that's just, we're talking psychological warfare. Not to mention, Huey P. Newton was shot. Not to mention, he was physically shot, you know, in the streets of Oakland, shot by Officer Fry and another officer, just shot. I mean, you know, I know some of us seen the Panther movie, we saw the Hollywood drama of it, but I mean, as a person who knows and who's been through that, you can't imagine the trauma that this man went through, being shot by the Oakland police. And them having the backing of the United States and the beast. You can't imagine the trauma this man went through and the paranoia this man went through. And then to get to the hospital, and he's strapped down to the gurney, you know, for operation, and the police come into his room in the hospital and start punching this man and beating this man while he's on the gurney, with bullet wounds and bullet holes and blood leaking out of his body. You cannot imagine the trauma that Minister Huey P. Newton faced during that time. And so when you look at it from a holistic perspective, he was a targeted individual. And there's so many others out here today that are targeted in that same manner. And so officially now they say that COINTELPRO started in 1956. Okay. They say it started, you know, in 1956. And they say officially, quote unquote, it ended in 1971. But I mean, damn, just if you look at some of the maneuvers that have happened since 1971 on until today, it's clear that there's plenty of covert operations against political groups and revolutionary groups right now, even today. Right now, even today, okay? And they're going to always put it in a premise where they're going to try to say they're defending freedom, you know, they're defending democracy, they're trying to maintain the social order and all this. They're going to always make it sound, you know, what they consider righteous and justified and great. And mind you, they've already put so much propaganda out there, and I'm really saying this on behalf of the New Black Panther Party, too. For us, they've put so much out there that when they make their move against the people, because the people, you know, don't see the hidden hand behind the closed door, they say, okay, we'll get them. Yeah, go ahead, right on. Yeah, take them out. They shouldn't have, you know, they shouldn't have been doing that. They were evil. They were this. They were that. They were the other. They, you know, in actuality, these were good brothers and sisters who were trying to uplift our people, uplift the community, and change the condition. But because the people took the bait sponsored by COINTELPRO, they would be eradicated without any outcry. Okay, so the big thing back then was that you couldn't be labeled a communist. You know, if you were labeled a communist, you know, that was supposed to be like you were Dracula or something. You know, if you were labeled a communist, I mean, they tried to label King a communist too, and they tried to label the Black Panther Party and some others communist. And if you were communist, that was like the worst thing in the world, you know. Or if you were socialist, you know, that was the worst thing in the world. And even if the people didn't understand what a communist was or didn't understand what a socialist was, you know, just because they were labeled that by the media, then the people would say, well, I don't want to be no communist. I don't want to be no socialist. And it would keep you know, you or me who were like that away from these beautiful movements and beautiful organizations because you didn't want the stigma, you didn't want the label, you didn't want the attachment that the state would place on these individuals. And so this happened with a whole lot of organizations. Of course, like I said, we know it happened to the Black Panther Party. It happened to SCLC. When they used to do things and used to be revolutionary, it happened to the NAACP. It happened to the Congress of Racial Equality. It happened, of course, to the Nation of Islam and other black nationalist groups. It happened to AIM. You know, it happened to the Students for a Democratic Society. It happened to all kinds of people. I'm just saying it happened to all kinds of people who were, you know, good brothers and sisters and who were really working for change. I mean, they really, really did slander the names of some good brothers and sisters. Now, mind you, while all of this was going on, and they were making moves like this on, you know, progressive black groups, the KKK was busy still hanging black people. Now, I'm just trying to show something to you. While all of this was going on, the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan, was still busy lynching, mobbing, and attacking black people. Now, if they would spend all that resource to infiltrate groups like the Black Panther Party, the Nation of Islam, CORE, you know, RAM, AIM, and other groups, why didn't they infiltrate the KKK with the plan to disrupt the KKK? Now, yeah, they sent, of course, we know from reading, they sent provocateurs or agents in the KKK. But they didn't disrupt the movement. I'm trying to show y'all something here. I'm trying to show you all my people. I'm trying to show you something. They had agents in the KKK, around in the mid-60s, but they did not send them in there to predominantly disrupt the Ku Klux Klan. When the agents hit the Black Panther Party, they completely disrupted the movement of the Black Panther Party in the 1960s. But when they were in the KKK, they didn't disrupt. I'm just trying to show y'all a contradiction here. We'll talk about that at a later time. But now, again, this was supposed to be what they suggest. This was supposed to be, you know, and it really was a well-kept secret. You know, many, especially the Panthers, many of the Panthers didn't, from what the elders tell me and from what I've studied and heard over time, they knew something was wrong. They knew something was up, but they didn't know exactly what it was. They couldn't put their finger on it. And this program, you know, really existed, you know, from 56, really from the early 50s, really mid to early 50s, on up until 1971, okay? And so all of that time, you had spying, you had provocateurs, you had, you know, slander, you had surveillance, you had assassination, all the way up until officially in 71. And then the only thing that made it break was when you had a couple of white folks who, you know, they were burglarizing some of the FBI field offices, and they got their hands on some papers. I mean, this is straight up what happened. They were robbing places and got into one of the field offices in Pennsylvania, got their hands on some papers. And the papers exposed the program to the communities and to the masses of the people. And so once the papers got out to the people, they had no choice but to deal with it. Now, even when the papers and the news of this got out to the community, they still refused at that time, Hoover and them, still refused to even confirm that it was real. Okay, now I'm talking people lost lives, families, you know, their freedom and everything. They still would not say whether or not this program was real. Okay. So, I mean, I'm just telling you, for those of y'all that like to be snitches, I always say this. I always say that the government never snitches on itself. The government never, ever snitches on itself. I am just trying to tell y'all something. And I want you to put what I'm saying in terms of snitching in context. All right? Don't be sending me no email, no crazy emails, and writing me no crazy letters. I'm talking about what our programs say. We're talking about collaboration with the oppressor. That's what I mean. Okay. For those of y'all, now mind you, they got all this surveillance communication and technology anyway, so they really don't need you anyway. But since you have those that are out there, I got to address you. Those of you who like to, you know, collaborate with the oppressor and tell what Sean Quali is doing today or what the new Black Panther Party has done and this, that, and the other, I'm just telling you, you're not needed. You're not needed. And what they ultimately do with the snitch, they ultimately get rid of you. If at all possible, they will get rid of you. And so anyway, the government, the state never snitches on itself. That's the point. It never snitches on itself. Even if they have to expose the snitch or the person who was the agent, as in the case of the brother who was a photographer or whatnot, they will never, you know, come out and officially say, until it's so far down the road that it doesn't really even matter. They will never come out and officially say, this is what we did, this is what happened. Same situation with the people who were injected with the venereal disease in the 40s. This information just came out a couple of days ago that they, you know, that they did more than just a Tuskegee experiment. They were injecting people with what I think was syphilis, injecting syphilis into people. And this was in the 40s. Now, we in 2010, okay? And they injected people with syphilis in the 40s. And so you can imagine what they're doing right now, you know, with these clinical trials. You know, they got these ads in the paper. You come and do this clinical trial. We'll give you this amount of money, or, you know, you'll get this kind of coupon. You can go on this vacation. You just come and let us, you know, do this clinical trial on you. Or here, take this pill, and this pill will, you know, make you stay up, you know, for 2 years and all this kind of thing. But they're not releasing to you or releasing to me what the actual effects of these pills and the actual effects of these, you know, clinical trials are doing to our people, okay? And this, again, all stems back to counterintelligence, to the sisters who, you know, are quick to pop birth control pills and all this type of deal. They're not telling you, family, what these birth control pills are doing to your body. They're not telling you that these pills are not only destroying the livers and destroying the kidneys, they're destroying the pill, the birth control pill, the very chemical essence of it destroys your very manufacturing ability. It destroys it. It literally destroys your manufacturing ability. It destroys the egg. It destroys the canal, just the pill. Not to mention the implants. I forget the name of them, but the implants that you that they you know put in your arm and put into your system. They're not telling you. When we tell you straight up that these people are Satan and these people are devil, we ain't just saying that because we like to say that. I'm not anyway. I'm not saying that. And Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, our national chairman in the New Black Panther Party, we ain't just saying that because we like the way that it sounds. When we say these people are Satan, these people are devil, these people are Beelzebub, these people are the princes and princesses of darkness and whatever other you know, colorful euphemism we can use to show you the negativity of their nature, we're being for real. We're being straight up with you that they're doing straight up experimental trials on black people and poor people that they don't even know what the outcome's going to be. Okay? As we talked in the last show about the fluoride that's in water. You know, they put the fluoride in water not to strengthen your teeth, but to keep us in a docile position, in a docile situation, that fluoride is the same chemical that they use in the gas chambers on the so-called Jews. That they use fluoride, a vaporized version of fluoride. They use that in the gas chambers, family. But then they'll bring it to the schools and tell your and my babies, hey, put this in your mouth and rinse this around in your mouth, and it'll keep your teeth strong. All right? And so as the old saying goes, if a man or woman won't treat you right, what makes you or me think that man or woman will teach you right? All right? And so all of us in the past who considered ourselves revolutionary, who considered ourselves activists, all of us were targeted. And right now, today, all of us are targeted. Okay? You might think now, I'm on the sidelines. I never really officially turned in no Panther membership form. I never officially did anything like that, and so they're not thinking about me. You are sadly mistaken. Just a few months ago, they were going around in communities doing the U.S. census. What do you think these censuses are for? What do you think that they're keeping track of? What do you think that they're keeping statistics for? They're not doing that just to be, you know, sending people around your neighborhood. When they're keeping track of numbers, they're keeping track of pie charts. They're keeping track of figures, of data, you know, and they're building a database. They're getting to know what's on your mind, whether you are a thinker who thinks inside of the box, inside of the program, inside of the system, or whether you're a thinker who thinks outside. You're a revolutionary, what they, you know, some might term an outlaw. You're somebody who, you know, doesn't agree with the status quo. They're processing all of this just by our answers on these forms, just by the way that we respond to certain questions. They're processing all of that, and just by the way that we respond with these censuses and these other things, they will label you, or they put you in a category that could make you a potential troublemaker. You know. Hell, I mean, look at the way they treat just people who get into minor offenses or people who made it get into big offenses, they hold that against you for the rest of your life. If you get a felony in the United States of America, in the United Snakes of America, they literally will do their best to hold that against you for the rest of your life. And you might not even be guilty of it. You may not even be guilty of it. But just because of the stigma that's attached to it. See, I'm not talking personal. I'm talking about a system here. So just because of the stigma that's attached to it, they do their best to hold that against you for the rest of your life. And so once you got that on your record, it's hard to really do anything, let alone get employment to feed your family, let alone, you know. So, yes, they're looking at you. They're looking at me. They, you know, and even if you don't consider yourself a revolutionary or an activist or a warrior, none of that, they still looking at you. Hey, you could be a Tom. You could be a straight-up Uncle Tom, somebody who's a bourgeoisie, someone who believes that they are the upper class, and they're still watching you to make sure that you ain't got one shred or one iota of a revolutionary spirit in you. They're keeping track. Don't think that these people are not keeping track. We'll take a quick call and come right back to it. 678-600, you're on the air with Black Power Radio. I guess you don't have a question. Now put your hand down. Okay, you're back. Okay, you're on the air. 678-600, you're on the air with Black Power Radio, the death and destruction of J. Edgar Hoover and COINTELPRO in 2010. Black Power, your question or comment?
All power to the people. I just wanted to, I just wanted to make a statement to what you were saying about, you know, how you are targeted. You know, any black people, you know, every day that we are on earth, you're targeted, whether you're a revolutionary or not. And, you know, because there's so many laws that are being passed every day, and everything that is passed, it affects every black person. And it's just time for black people to wake up and start educating themselves of what their history is and start working towards building and having their own, because a lot of us, we don't support our black businesses as well, and a lot of our black businesses are failing, and we're too busy trained on looking for a handout and looking for jobs with them where we can create things of our own. So I just wanted to state that.
No, you're absolutely right, and especially as what we're termed revolutionary black nationalists, we 100% are working and desirous to have a land and territory of our own. As the Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul-Muhammad, the Black Power General, we're talking about black laws. We want black laws for black people in a black land of our own. So you're 100% right. But see, now here's the thing, sis. The thing is this, that when you have the propaganda of the enemy out there, and when I say propaganda, I even mean it in the sense of the white man's dream, like the white America's dream. Like, you know, you go to school, you work a job, and, you know, you'll be okay. Even when you have that kind of propaganda out there, it works against us doing for self. You see what I'm saying? It works against us because you have people that are buying into it, so they think, well, okay, I'm going to work. I'm going to go to school. I'm going to do this. And then, you know, they get out here, and we get out here, and you can't even, you know, you can go to college. And I'm not knocking college. Just using it as an example. You can go to college for 10 years. You can go for 10 straight years in the field of business, and then you get out, and then you can't even put the business together. You know what I'm saying? Because a certain red tape, or you go in for, you know what I mean, for psychology. You can't even get out with your bachelor's degree and find a job in psychology. You know what I'm saying? It's because of how the system is set up, though. It ain't because he or she's a bad person. It's because of how the system is set up. So I agree with you, you know, but until we, until we really move on the order of things and the system of things, we always going to be struggling from the bottom because they always going to keep their foot on us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but there's always a way around it. And the main thing is learning the laws and the loopholes, you know. And there's always a way to skin a cat. I mean, it's not that, you know, we got to always depend on them to do stuff, because you can start your own business. And we've been trained that we have to depend on them. But see, back in the 60s, this is what messed everything up, because at first black people had their own banks, their own postal services, their own grocery stores. And when the civil rights came, it made us lose everything that we had of our own, and we became subservient to white folks, depending on them for everything that we have. So it's the only way that you're going to do that is you got to separate yourself. You got to come out of white America, and it's got to be black America versus white America, and it's about having your own, and you ain't got to get everything from them to start it, because each one of us, we all have talents within ourselves. And while people are out here looking for a job, they can tap into what they got. A lot of people can do hair. You don't need anything to keep you from doing hair. You can go out and fix some cars. There's so many things that you can do within yourself without depending on a white man for everything that you do. But the thing of it is, we all have to network and pull our resources together. This is the only way that you want to be able to break the chains of slavery, because we're still in slavery, even though, you know, they say you're free, but you're not, because there's certain things that you can say that you can't say, because everything is not covered in the freedom of speech. So there's so many things out here that black people don't have knowledge of, that it's a mess, you know, and it's just time for us to wake up and start reading between the lines of what's really going on.
And that's real. I agree with you 112%. And I think that the more that people like yourself and myself and others with this type of mentality, the more that we, like you say, pull our resources together, come together, and do for ourselves, not in a rhetoric sense, but in a concrete sense, I think that we can spread the idea. That's really what we're getting at here, is that we want to spread the idea that, hell, we are and can be self-reliant without having to depend on the white man. I mean, straight up, without having to beg for a handout. So, hell, I want to, you know, organize with you and other like-minded people. The New Black Panther Party, we want to organize with you and other like-minded people.
Right. I mean, it's just so much out there. You know, a lot of us, we don't want to pull our resources, because it's like, instead of us pulling together, it's like we try to pull each other down. And that has got to stop. And the only way to stop that, you got to break this cycle of the Willie Lynch theory, because Willie Lynch has really done a job on black people. And you got to get up out of that slave mentality. And it's just, I mean, 2012 is coming here, and white folks have ushered so many laws into effect. They got this new law, that H.R. Bill 89, and that's with the concealed weapons law. And this thing is a mess, because a lot of black people, when they hear the word concealed, they're thinking that, well, hey, I can carry my gun they could put it in the in the glove compartment, and they thinking that they could carry it in their purse. That's not true, because a concealed weapon means it has to be in plain view. So that means you got to be able, you got to carry it on a holster where they can see it. But then that's a trap too, because the first thing when the police see, especially a black man carrying a gun on a holster, they gonna draw their guns on them. So black people have to be aware of the different laws that are out there, because a lot of, you got to learn that language. And that's one thing that Huey P. Newton knew. He knew the language. He studied the law. And if you want to be a revolutionary, that's the main thing you need to know, is the language. And you need to know what you can do and what you cannot do. And this is what's getting a whole lot of revolutionaries in trouble, is because, for one, this covert operation has been set up to keep black people deaf, dumb, and blind. And as long as they got you where you don't know the law and you're doing things, and especially when you're trying to educate people, it's a trap out there. And you could be at the wrong place at the wrong time. And next thing you know, you messed up. You know, so you have to be very, very careful.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, sis. And one thing that's not talked about enough, and I'm going to try to do a better job, and I'm going to do a better job of shining light on it, is just what you said about Huey P. Newton, and not only Minister Huey P. Newton, but even our national chairman, who is an attorney, is that when Minister Huey P. Newton made his moves, he had a gun in one hand and a law book in the other hand. You know what I'm saying? So he would say that when you step outside of the bounds of the law, then he said we would defend ourselves. And it's the same thing for today, like you say, that we have to know how to move, how to maneuver, and which way we should maneuver, you know. So I'm 100% in agreement with you, sister. What city are you calling from, Queen?
From Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, GA. Well, we're going to organize with you in Atlanta. Email us at NBPPHQ at Yahoo.
What city are you in?
The national headquarters is out of D.C. My hometown is in Louisville. And so
I believe it or not, I was once a new Black Panther member.
Is that right?
Matter of fact, I used to be second in command in the city of Atlanta.
Is that right?
That's
well,
right.
Hell, we wanna open the arms back up to you. I don't know what happened back then, but we have a totally new structure now. And so what's your name, sister?
Sister Tia X.
Sister Tia X. Okay, I'm Sean Kwali. I'm your comrade, and we your comrades. And so hell, we wanna build up Atlanta even stronger than what it is potentially now. So hell. Email us, NBPPHQ at Yahoo. Let's organize together. I really want to put some of those law classes that you were talking about. We need to put some law classes together.
Think, you know, since, you know, Malik is, as being a leader, especially in law, that's one requirement that he should have all his comrades doing. Because if you don't know the law, especially Atlanta down here, I'm sure you're familiar with the Atlanta chapter down here, but I'm not even going to discuss that. But anyways, they just gotta get their thing over here a little organized, a little better. One thing I could say.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and again, sister, that's why we were asking people to bring their ideas, their time, their talents, and their efforts. If you know, the people would bring, see, what the thing that I've been stressing over the past couple of months here is that, as you know, as I can tell that you know, that the Panther is the people. The Panther is not just the vanguard or the military brothers that you see with the, you know, the beret on and the black, you know what I mean? And that is the Panther, don't get me wrong. But the Panther is the people. So if the people would bring their ideas into the party and make the party a better party with the ideas, time, talent, and effort, then you have a working organism that supports the whole. You know what I'm saying? I know you understand that.
Exactly. So I mean, like you said, the Panther represents all Black people, and it's standing up for what you believe in, you know. And it's too many of our political prisoners right now that are locked up because of fighting for the rights of Black people. So it's a job. That's all I can say. It's a big job that needs to be done, but it's going to take all of us to do it. We can't do it individually, you know. And a lot of people say, well, you know, can't one organization do it? Everybody got to join forces together in order to bring about change.
That's straight up right. Well, I appreciate your comment. We'll have to talk more so off of the air. And so, like I said, email me and I'll be in contact with you. We'll organize to build up how we can there in that area. And you said your name, Sister Tia?
Mm-hmm.
My pleasure to talk to you, Sister Tia.
Yeah, my pleasure to talk with you. Also, I have a radio show on this on the air. It's called Breaking Black Men Free, and I'm the host of the show. So if you want to check me out, you can just go to Breaking Black Men Free and just take out the G in Breaking.
Hey, I'm all about breaking some black men and some black women free. So I'm definitely going
to
say that.
But the only way the black man, the only way the black woman is going to be free, you got to get that black man free first. And, you know, we have a whole lot of black men today that won't stand that because they're scared. But it's going to take that black woman, a strong black woman, in order to free the black man, because right now you need a strong black woman by your side. And that's the only way we're going to make it.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, Sister Tia, thank you so much, and we appreciate your comment and your concern, and look forward to organizing with you in the future.
Okay. Well, have a blessed day.
You too, Queen. Black power to you.
All power.
And so that was Sister Tia, you all. And so Sister Tia just made it, she just made it plain, you know, that again, in dealing with COINTELPRO and in dealing with what is going on with us as a people, we have to pull together. A lot of what happened in terms of the forged letters and the disinformation or the misinformation that happened with the Panther Party, the Black Panther Party of the 60s, and we're going to bring it home to ourselves, would not have happened if they were a much tighter unit. If there was no dissension between Eldridge and Huey already, there would have never been any area for the government to work out in. Now, for you naysayers, but I know some of you, you know, the naysayers out there, you're quick to say, you know, well, this is conspiracy theory, you know. You know, you're just spouting out rhetoric and conspiracy theory. I want to bring in a man who was a federal agent. I want to bring a clip from him named Darthard Perry. He was a federal agent, and he's talking about some of the things that he had to do as a COINTEL agent, a federal agent for the FBI. So I want us to, let's now bring on Brother Darthard and hear what he has to say and make it relevant.
Cultural groups. Before we go into that step by step, how much research and study did the FBI engage in of black culture in the late 60s?
A great amount.
Give me an idea.
But the thing is, they have a file on every type of magazine that blacks read. They have a file on the music.
Music?
Music, dance, theater, actors, comedians, you name it, man.
And they would actually study these?
Oh, yes. Things? Oh, yes, definitely.
What would they do with music?
To understand the people, you have to understand the culture. To infiltrate, you have to understand. You had a lot of so-called white liberals that were infiltrating the so-called black groups using the information that they had gathered from the studies of blacks.
You mean just to understand the behavior pattern of our people?
Oh, yeah. I can, you know, Will Heaton could name out some jams of Miles Davis that I hadn't even heard of. He could name off some books that I hadn't even read pertaining to black culture.
Do you ever see agents actually studying music of...
Yes. Yes, I've seen them going over even video portion of cultural events. The understanding, like when, okay, you have an organization like Leroy Jones Black House. You remember that? Okay, Leroy Jones's place, which was done on the thing of tribalism. That's where I first heard the word kintu, mantu, huntu, hintu, these words of the African continuum. You know, I learned that from an agent. He ran it down to me. They make in-depth studies of the personalities of the people they're dealing with, too, culturally. It always helps. It's the thing of, you can take their culture and use it against them.
How large would you say an extensive collection on our culture would you say the FBI has? Would you rate it as large as a particular library, like the Schomburg Library in Harlem? Or
I would rate it better. I would rate it better, and the fact is that they go into details that we probably would overlook.
And so we'll stop it there. But you can hear. You can hear for yourself, family. That, again, is Darth Hard Parry. It's his name, Darth Hard Parry. He was an FBI informant who infiltrated many of the black organizations. And you hear him. You don't just hear me saying what I'm saying. You hear him for yourself telling you that they build personality profiles on you and on me. They check out what kind of music we're listening to. They look at what you eat, what restaurant we go to. They look at, you know, what movie we frequent. They're checking us out. They're watching what we are doing for the expressed purpose of moving on the black movement. Now, let's bring it home to 2010, because now, you know, we say, well, you know, officially the program, COINTELPRO, ended officially in 1971, officially in 71. But see, now, family, you have a situation that is called Homeland Security. I'm trying to show y'all how this thing has grown up now. You have a situation now called Homeland Security, which is nothing more than an extension of COINTELPRO. It is an extension of the counterintelligence program of the United States of America. Homeland Security, family, they broke it down to where now it is an umbrella term, okay? Hear me good. It is an umbrella term, meaning that anytime they feel like someone is a dissenter or an agitator or someone who is involved in activity that they don't approve of, then they can immediately label you, un-American, quote-unquote, or they'll label you, terrorist, or they'll label you, whatever. You know, the same way that they were using the term communist in the 50s and the 60s, They're now using that term terrorist, or they're using that term of dissenter, or someone who's quote-unquote un-American, or whatever term they want to use to say that, you know, you're against, you're against the order of things, you're against whatever, and this is what we're going to use to put you in jail, okay? And so COINTELPRO now officially disbanded in 71, but now has continued on in the spirit now and in the actual policy of Homeland Security. And so, you know, now what that does, I'm trying to show you, what that does is it pulls together all of the government agencies. It pulls together different government agencies, talking about the Guard, the National Guard. It pulls together FEMA. It pulls together the Coast Guard. It pulls together the Customs and Border Protection. It pulls together the Immigration and the Enforcement. And it pulls together the Secret Service and all of them. It pulls them all together and makes them one consistent force to be used against whoever they deem an undesirable, as they term it. Okay? And so this was that they were consolidated. These groups were put together all underneath George W. Bush. Now, y'all wonder why we blasted Bush so hard in the last issue of the New Black Panther newspaper. It is because Bush, along with being the executioner and killing so many other people in Texas on the death row and all the other things that he has done, he also consolidated these forces into one cabinet, and that was what presented now Homeland Security of 2002. Okay, and so you might say, well, what does this have to do with me as a revolutionary? What does this have to do with anything in terms of black power? It got everything to do with you and me in terms of black power, because now where they were using covert activity in terms of moving on the Black Panther Party of the 1960s, and they were moving covertly on RAM and on the Nation of Islam and on CORE and on the even the revolutionary version or the progressive version of the NAACP. Now they can outright move on revolutionary and progressive organizations or revolutionary and progressive people. All right? And so when you see now, you see the new Black Panther Party in a 20-plus month campaign against the Department of Justice in terms of, when I say campaign, I mean where they launched a full propaganda assault and a full assault against the party to try and take it to us to have us, sued as a party and have our national chairman sued and have the leadership, all in scrambles. When you hear this now, it should make more sense as to why we have gone through many of the things that we've been going through for 20-plus months. And they still, when you put in a Google search on New Black Panther, they still are at it. They still are putting that propaganda out there. We don't get no coverage when we're doing the food and breakfast programs. We don't get the kind of coverage when we're doing the clothing drives and the mentorship programs, and we're doing the rallies or we're doing, the rescues and we're doing whatever we're doing. We don't get that kind of coverage. But if it's something that can serve the propaganda machine, then you get all the coverage in the world, all the negative coverage. And it's the same. It's the same now, the same as it was with COINTELPRO. It is the same with Homeland Security. So the question now that I have to ask as a revolutionary is how can I work now? And you have to ask yourself this question. How can you work to bring about the death and destruction of J. Edgar Hoover and COINTELPRO in 2010? That's a real question. If they are moving on us. Now, again, mind you, we're not talking about Hoover in terms of his physical body, in terms of his bones, all of that's in the ground by God's grace and lovely permission. But we're talking about the embodiment of his program. We're talking about his minions who continue on. Right now, today, I mean, just like you had Mayor Daley, who was working in Chicago against the Panther parties, you got a Mayor Daley right now who's about to leave office soon, but he's there right now, a continuation of generations of the same system that has existed for a long time. And so how can we bring about the destruction and the overturn of the movement that J. Edgar Hoover pronounced and pushed against revolutionary organizations? Because now we have to examine it. We have to examine it, because if we don't look at it from an analytical standpoint, we will injure our road to freedom. If every time we go to get free, we are always interrupted by a force outside of ourselves that works against our freedom and works to stop us from doing for ourselves, we will always be tangling and dealing to get unraveled from the beast, always. And so we're going to have to stop, family. We're going to have to stop and figure out what we're going to do to move on that which stops our freedom, that which injures our process, that which gets in our way. We're going to have to figure it out. We're going to have to figure out how to, as the spiritual ones say, how to slay Goliath. You know what I'm saying? We're going to have to figure out how to move these obstacles out of our way, because as long as we have to deal with COINTELPRO, counterintelligence, and have to deal with Homeland Security and other little measures that have gotten in the way of the Panther Party of the 1960s and work on the new Black Panther Party, as long as we have not figured out how to effectively move and maneuver and offset the forces of oppression against us and against our people, we will always continue to be tangled up in the beast trap. And so we must start talking now in a revolutionary manner. In a revolutionary sense, we must begin to talk about getting the beast foot up off of our necks. We must begin to now talk strong and begin to, as they say, flex their muscles, flex our muscles. We must begin now to flex our muscle a little bit, family. We saying we the revolutionaries. We saying we the activists. We saying we the strongest of the strong. We the baddest of the bad. We the coldest of the cold. Well, damn, we got to begin to flex our muscles, man, because the enemy swinging on us all the time. The enemy swinging on us all the time, but where's the response? Where's the response? I mean, hell, if we can't do no more than write an article, man, just write an article in defense of the Black Power movement and in defense of the program and position of the new Black Panther Party and revolutionary activity, then if that's all you can do, then do what you got to do. And you can't do no more than interview somebody and get a revolutionary interview going on. If that's what you got to do, do what you got to do. If you're the one, if you're the brother or the sister that's going to be, you know, holding the shotgun, and you're going to be the person that's about defense, then, you know, do what you got to do. We got to do what we got to do. I'm just saying to say this. Everybody's not going to play the same role, family. Everybody is not going to play the same role. Everybody's not going to do the same thing. But I'm still saying this. We must do what we got to do. Whatever it is that you feel like you got to do. You might not do what I'm doing. You might not be the broadcast type. You might not be the type of person who wants to broadcast and talk and all this type of deal, but you might be the one that's going to write with the pen. You might be the one that's going to work with the youth. You might be the one, you know, who's going to organize the food and breakfast program. You might be the one who's going to provide shelter. You might be the one that's going to work on disaster preparedness. You might be the one, huh, who's going to teach the people self-defense and martial arts. You might be that one. And if you're that one, then do what you got to do. Because the people are waiting, man. The people are waiting to get free. And it's a sad state of affairs. They're waiting to get free, and they have not figured out how to move in a revolutionary fashion. They've not figured out yet how to move in a way that will get the beast foot up off of our neck. They have not figured out how to get the beast foot up off of their necks. And so it's us, family, that have to set the example. That have to set the revolutionary example. If we are the vanguard, if we are the ones who are to go in first before anybody else goes in, it is us who have to set the example. We got to set the tone. We can't fall victim the same way that the Black Panther Party of the 1960s fell victim. We can't be bickering and beefing and arguing with each other, and every time something happens, it's always some drama with each other, or we nitpicking with each other, and we, you know, we going to extra length to try to prove another person wrong, and all this type of deal that was caused by the counterintelligence program of the 1950s on down to the 70s. We can't be victims of that today, because they're going to launch an attack on us. Let me say this, they already launched the attack. Sorry, they've launched the attack on the Black Power movement. They are not desirous. They don't want to see black people rise up for self-defense, for Kuji Chagalia. They don't want to see that day where it's an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a limb for a limb, a life for a life. They don't want to see that. They don't want no part of that. They don't want no part of that, because they know that according to the laws of Maat, that everything has a balance. Everything has a reciprocity. They know in their soul and their hearts, and by the mathematics of history, they know that what goes around comes around. And so they expect it all the time. We the only ones who talk integration. We the only ones who talk that integration is talk, and talk that let's all get along and hold hands and kiss little white babies and all this kind of talk. We the only ones that talk that kind of talk. That's us. We talk that kind of talk. But no intelligent people are looking forward to, you know, being intertwined with their enemies. No intelligent people are looking to roll with their oppressor. No intelligent people are comfortable in a land that is not their own. No intelligent people are trying to hang on to white America's dream. Hell, even white America ain't hanging on to white America's dream. So what do we look like hanging on right now in 2010 to white America's dream? White America's dream has not worked for us. It has not worked for us. It has not helped us in any fashion. Yeah, you can drive a car. Yeah, you go to work. Yeah, you might go to school. Whatever the case is, we do all of that. But what has it got us in terms of freedom? What has it got us in terms of the masses of our people? What has it got us in terms of helping our people get up from this situation? What has it got us? It ain't got us nothing but hard times, suffering, and nakedness, and out of doors as a people. That's all it's gotten us. And for those of you who have hit the glass ceiling, you might have got you a little bit of money along the way, but as soon as your master tell you to get in your place and step down, you got to get in your place and step down. This is why we're sitting here saying, as the sisters say earlier, we must have a land of our own. Now, yeah, J. Edgar Hoover is physically in the ground. But J. Edgar Hoover and his program and his aims and his objectives are still running around today in 2010, permeating all through the Black Power movement. Why are we not strong enough now? Why are we not stronger than we appear? Why are we not stronger? It is because we have not cut off the tentacles of COINTELPRO with the bickering and the backbiting and the slander and the gossip. All of that that's going on, the hating on each other, you know, the withholding our hands. I don't want to see this one successful, so I'm going to withhold my hand. I'm not going to put my time and my talent and my effort into it. I'm going to withhold my hand. All of that helps the aims of J. Edgar Hoover. If you are a new Black Panther and you are willfully withholding your hand, and you see attorney and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz busting his ass 24 hours a day and 7 days a week, and you see the membership of the New Black Panther Party busting our ass 24 hours a day and 7 days a week, and you willfully withhold your hand and you willfully do not work and get up and do something for the people, then you helping, and we're helping the aims of J. Edgar Hoover and COINTELPRO, and ultimately we are helping the aims and objectives of Homeland Security today. Yes, they still have us under surveillance today. Hell, we you hear us talk so much about our trip in Newburgh, but we rarely talk about how the police was writing down our license plate numbers. You rarely hear about the brothers or the brother who was arrested there, because they were running people's names and all kind of stuff. You know, you don't hear us talk about the snipers that were on the rooftops. You don't hear us talk about none of that, because it's really unimportant. All of that, I mean, it's important to a degree, but it's not important overall. All of that is a part of the revolutionary scene. It's a part of the revolutionary backdrop. It's a part of that which you must go through and what we must go through to be terrified. It is a part of that. But, I mean, it's real, family, and that's why it's so beautiful to watch our big brother and champion, Dr. and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, when he is in that kind of element. It's beautiful because the man just, he has a peace about him. He has a straight-up peace about him that just make you feel like, man, everything is all right. I don't know if y'all have ever had that kind of experience with a general, man. But when you in battle and you look to your general to see the kind of expression that's on your general's face, to kind of get a feel for, you know, what's on the general's mind, and you look over and you see just a man that's just smiling, or if it's a sister general, she's just smiling, and, you know, just as calm and, you know, just as relaxing, just, you know, and, I mean, but totally aware, totally alert, totally understanding everything that's happening, but just at calm. I mean, it's something that is definitely connected to the Creator and the ancestors, man. And it lets you know that we, you know, that we have something special. And I'm saying to the members of the New Black Panther Party and the Black Power Movement, wherever you are, we have something special in this. And we owe it to those who have come before us to not let the bloody stained banner of the Panther drop. We owe it to them. We owe it to those who may have not have been Panthers but may have been in CORE, may have been the early pioneers of the Nation of Islam or the UNIA, may have been in RAM, may have been in many other organizations, SNCC and others. We owe it to them to keep our heads up high. We owe it to them to sacrifice. We owe it to them to fight. We owe it to them to swing. Huh? We owe it to them to get busy and go for self and work for self and push this cracker out of power. We owe it to them because they didn't have to do what they did. None of our ancestors, those who have passed on and those elders who are still here today, who we will honor on October the 22nd in Harlem, New York. We owe it to them. We owe it to them to push forward and to move to walk in the light of a brighter sun. It is straight up cowardice. It is straight up cowardice. If you hear this kind of talk and teaching coming from my mouth and you see the kind of actions that are going on throughout the world, not just in America, but all across the globe, don't be fooled by no damn CNN now. There are revolutionary activities happening all over the globe. You are a fool if you would sit back in your sofa and sit back in your chair and see all of this going on and you don't say to yourself as a strong black man or a strong black woman, how can I get involved with this? How can I get down with this? How can I roll with this? How can I improve this? How can I make this flourish? You are a fool in 2010 if you refuse to say to yourself, this revolutionary movement is for me. As we heard the Black Power General say, the Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul-Muhammad, revolution is the only solution. There is no other alternative outside of revolution. There ain't none. I don't care what you name. I don't care what name you put it under. But if it don't equal up to revolution, if it don't equal up to uprooting, overturning the whole system, you ain't talking about nothing. And you ain't got nothing. There ain't no form of spirituality. Ain't none of that you can show me that don't talk about overthrowing and overturning, uprooting up unjust systems. Ain't no political activity, ain't nothing that is righteous that you can show me that don't talk about overturning, overthrowing, and disrupting unjust systems and unjust rulership. Ain't none. If it's from our people, if it's from our ancestors, then it's talking about that because we come from a warrior people. Our people have been warriors from the beginning. We've been warriors from the start. We've been warriors from day one, and we still warriors today. We still warriors. We just got to wake up. We've been lulled to sleep. Like I said, we got fluoride in our water. We got other things in our water. We got other things in our mind and in our food. Even the food is chemically processed. We talked about chemical and biological warfare. The food is, for the most part, chemically processed, and they put chemicals in the food to give you certain reactions in your body. You know what I'm saying? If you're not used to detoxing and cleansing your body out, then all of that stuff has an ill effect on the body. This beast, the cracker, is always thinking warfare. The cracker is always thinking about overthrow, overturn. Keep the black nation in a stagnant position. Keep this one here. Put this puppet up in front of everybody else and make this one to appear to have reached the pinnacle of success. The cracker, the white man, is always talking and thinking like that. I'm not talking about little Jill or little Billy Bob down the street with the overalls on. Or, you know, I ain't talking just to them. I'm talking about the ones that are in power, the ones that make decisions straight up to them. Them are the ones who are putting these puppets in place, and they're the ones who, is running the rest of the little white folks, the one that, you know what I mean, would be the guard of snakes in the snake clan. You know what I'm saying? They running them. And so we got to be wise enough now to start going for self, start thinking about self-determination, start taking off the chain. Hell, we right now just putting the chain on ourselves. The slave master put the chain on us, and we just say, all right, well, the chain is going to be a fashion accessory. It's just going to be a fashion accessory. We're just going to chain ourselves and just walk around with the chain because, you know, we just used to having a chain on. No, we got to begin to take the damn chain up off of our brains and take the chains up off of our bodies, straight up. If you ain't willing to take the chain off of your brain, you ain't going to take the chain off of your body. We got to take the chain off of our brain. If you're walking around in 2010 with the white man's name on your body, on your mind, take the white man's chain off yourself. Stop calling yourself after white folks' names. Stop it. Stop it. Stop calling yourself after white folks' names. Ain't none of us over here with, you know, the last names, no offense to nobody, but with the last names of Williams or Johnson, you know what I mean, Smith or Culpepper or any of that. Ain't none of that, none of our names. All of our names gave glory to who we were and who we are as a people. Whether it's from Swahili or whatever the root is that may have been our language, it always gave glory to who we were and are as a people, and it gave glory and honor to our ancestors and glory to the Creator. Always, every single name. If you watched Roots, you saw how the man would put the baby up to the sky, hold the baby up, and you know what I mean, and go through the whole little ceremony and dedicate that baby and say the baby's a special baby and get a baby a special name that baby can live up to. But we giving our baby white folks' names. You naming your baby a white folk name, a white man, a white woman's name, an Englishman name, or a French name. And then we going to say that name is all good. Walking around talking about, well, I got French in my blood. You know, I got English in my blood. I got this in my blood. You got all kind of blood except for black blood. You don't want to claim the black blood. You won't claim the French blood or the English blood or the Italian blood or this. You know what I mean? When black is dominant. Black is dominant. If you got black in you, then you black. That's what it is. If you straight up black, you black. I mean, don't sit up and say I'm black, but I'm half Portuguese. I'm black, but I'm half Italian. I'm black, but I'm half Spanish. I'm black, but I'm no. You either black or you ain't black. You know what I'm saying? You African or you ain't African. Whatever. Don't switch it up. And don't take pride in giving your people and giving your baby white folks names. All of this is a part of counterintelligence. It is a part of counterintelligence. It counters your intelligence. Start, if you haven't already, start naming your babies names that glorify the Creator, glorify your people, glorify your ancestors. Give them names that mean something. The white man names himself and herself after creation because they're made people. They're a made people. So they name themselves Rock and things that were already here by our people. You know what I'm saying? The Creator made. They named themselves like that because they are made people. But you and me, we've been here. Our people have been here since the beginning of time, since the start. You know what I'm saying? We have been here. And so, hell, we must get back to the basics. We got to get back to the basics. We got to get back to black, get back to our customary culture, get back to talking that talk that allowed us to be great, allowed us to build, start thinking the kind of thoughts that allowed us to build, allowed us to maneuver, start acting in a way where we don't show low self-esteem, but we show pride, man. We show pride and we show dignity and we show courage. Why do you think our people put the buildings in the middle of the desert and the monuments in the middle of the desert, you know, the body of a lion, the head of a black ruler? Why do you think that is? You can't have no low self-esteem and you putting monuments and things like that. We putting gold all around our buildings and our homes, and we putting even among our those who transcend and pass on, we put gold and rubies all around the sarcophagus, and we wrap them all up in fine linen. You can't have no low self-esteem and you moving like that. The only reason we got low self-esteem is because we taking the teachings of the white man. We've taken the culture of the white man, and we took it all for our own. We took it for ourselves. We took it like it was ours, and we've taken hold to it. And now we're scared to give it back. Here we are, scared to give it back because we scared we don't know, you know, if what's really ours is going to work. But the white folks use it all the time. They use our ideas all the time. You know what I'm saying? Even, I mean, something small, Kentucky Fried Chicken, something small. Here, that cracker stole that from a black man. You know he stole it from the black man. He stole that recipe from the, come on now, you know the white man stole it from the black man. You know what I'm saying? All the inventions, everything that they took credit for, they took it from our people. Everything. Hell, the building of this country, we know that came from our people. We know it came from our people, but we don't reap none of the benefits. We don't reap none of the benefits of being here, but they keep us here. And then you got them silly ones that say, they talk about go back to Africa. You know what I'm saying? But then they colonized Africa, and they set up puppet African governments under white control. You know what I'm saying? So we got a lot of work to do, family. We got a lot of work to do, and we don't have time to sit around and bicker and complain and nitpick about what ain't happening when it's a lot of stuff that could happen, and it's a lot of stuff that will happen. If we're willing to get busy, if we're willing to put one foot in front of the other foot and make some motion, if we're willing to break the inertia and willing to break the mental chains that are on our minds, there's a lot of stuff that can happen. I'm so thankful that Black Power Radio can come to you like this and at least talk to your brain for a little while and talk to my brain for a little while, because, hell, too many other black organizations, man, they're getting soft nowadays. Integration seems to be the order of the day now. Like, you know, like it's cool just to do everything with the white man or just do everything with everybody else. What's wrong with being all black? The agent, Darth Hall Perry, you heard him say earlier that they would send white, what they call white radicals. They would send white radicals into the black organizations for the expressed purpose of gathering information and for gathering details on black folks and black movements and black revolutionaries. And so you wonder why the new Black Panther Party, for those of you who wonder, some of you know why, but you wonder why the new Black Panther Party doesn't allow white folks in to be members of the new Black Panther Party. One reason, not the only reason, but one reason is because you all be agents. And we got enough black agents as it is. We got enough black informers running around as it is. Hell, we damn sure don't need the white man up in our mix. We don't need the white man up in our mix for nothing. So we want us all black, like Malcolm used to say, man. You know what I mean? The only thing he wanted to integrate was his coffee. You know what I mean? Straight up. You know what I mean? And give me mine black anyway. But I'm just saying, we got to get back to the basics. We got to get back to that teaching where we are one community. We are one nation with one destiny, with one aim, one goal, and one purpose. We got to get back because we've drifted so far away, and everything that we have taken from this people, it has led to our death and destruction, whether it is their eating habits, whether it is the way that they think, their educational system, whether it is the way that they take care of their health, whether it's the way that they talk to their families, communicate with their spouses. Everything that we have taken from the white civilization, it has led to the death and destruction of black people and the black nation. Everything that they touch and everything that they operate with, it causes our death. Hell, they even are destroying the very solar system that we live in. Destroying the solar system. And they know they're destroying the solar system. They know about the emissions in cars and the fumes and the emissions from the chemical plants and the emissions from the aerosol sprays and the chemical trails from the planes. They know about all that stuff. And they don't give a damn. So what makes you, if they don't care about the solar system, if they don't care about the planet that is our home, what makes you think that they're going to care about your black behind, that they're going to care about you or care about me or care about your babies or care about my babies enough to teach us right and treat us right and do right by us and do the right thing like Spike say? They don't give a damn, family. They don't care. It's obvious. We've been in this position, you know, saying over 400 years. You hear it say 400 years, but it's been over 400 years. We've been in this position, and we've been in this condition, and ain't none of them I don't give a damn how liberal they may have claimed to be, or how progressive they may have claimed to be. Ain't none of them lifted a hand to help in any real substantial way to help black people. None of them. Not a one. I don't care if you talk about the so-called Jews that went on freedom rides that the Black Power General talked about. None of them. None of them have helped black people in any substantial way. So for those of you who are looking for help from white folks, you're going to be waiting a long time. Our position is straight up do for self. We carry the position of Malcolm. We carry the position of Garvey. We carry the position of the Elijah Muhammad's. We carry the position of those who know and talk about doing for self. We carry the position of all of those who push for black power. And you got to start talking about black empowerment. You know what I mean? And even some of you who are afraid to say black power, you might want to say something else besides black power. Just take the time out in your daily life and start saying black power. Just say it. If you can't even say it out loud, just say it to yourself. Start saying black power. That's what J. Edgar Hoover feared. J. Edgar Hoover feared the rise of a black, what he termed, messiah. He didn't say he was looking in the Arab community. He didn't say that he was looking in the Latino community. He didn't say that he was looking in the Japanese community. He didn't say he was looking in any community, but the black community. He said he was looking for the rise of a black messiah, a black messiah. And that means not to get you off into some spookyism, you know what I mean? But that means when you say black messiah, that means one who will send that word, send the instructions, send the maneuver that will raise the rest of the dead or rest of the sleeping and pull us up out of our mental graves, man. Pull us up out of the condition and make us true revolutionaries. You know what I'm saying? That's what he talked about. He talked about stopping the rise of that black one. He knew that white man already knew. The beast already knew it was going to come from black people. He knew it was going to come from us. We the ones that be having white Jesus on our wall and stuff like this. It come from our people. But the popes, the cracker popes with them dresses on, they don't got no white Jesus. They be having black Jesus in there. They be having, you know, pictures, quote-unquote Jesus. We know that wasn't his name, but I'm just using it for conversation. They be having the black picture in there. They be having the black Madonna and child in there. And all these spiritual figures, they be black in there. They might not tell the rest of the congregation, but you can see the pictures all the time. All the time over there, they bow down to the black man. You know what I'm saying? And they know that the revolutionaries and the revolution will come from black people. Why do you think they work so hard to keep us in this condition and in this position? Because they know where it's coming from. And if you have ever played any kind of sports, if you've ever played any kind of defensive position, hell, you know that when you are expecting a blitz, you got to cover your angles. You got to cover your areas. You got to know where the ball going to be thrown to. And so they already know it's going to come from black folk. They don't got no doubt about it. We are the most mistreated people anywhere in the world. You always get the ones that say, well, don't you know, Brother Sean, that other people have been abused? Don't you know other people have been mistreated? Yeah, but ain't no people. There is no people who have been oppressed, enslaved, disrupted, discontinued, and dismembered like black people. There is not a one. Not nowhere on the face of the planet Earth or anywhere else in any other part of the constellation. There is no people who have been through what we have been through. And so they know since we have been through the worst of the worst, we will produce the best of the best. The way to produce the death and destruction of J. Edgar Hoover and COINTELPRO in 2010 is to do everything that they don't want you to do. If they don't want us to organize, we must organize. If they don't want us to unite, we must unite. If they don't want us to be black nationalists, as they say in the Freedom of Information Act papers, then we must be black nationalists. They don't want us to be pan-Africanists. We must be pan-Africanists. If they don't want us to be revolutionary, then we must be revolutionary. If they don't want us to be thinkers, then we must be thinkers. If they don't want us to be activists, then we must be activists. If they don't want us to join on and link on with any progressive organizations or revolutionary organizations like the New Black Panther Party, then we must join on to these revolutionary progressive organizations like the New Black Panther Party. We must. We must do everything that they say we shouldn't do. That's the way you bring on the death and the destruction. That's the only way you can do it. You can't do it trying to work within their system and play by their rules and do everything that they say, you know, and dot your I's, a certain way, and cross your T's a certain way. You're not going to get it like that. We're not going to get free like that. We ain't going to get free playing that kind of game. We ain't going to do it. Yeah, we got to be intelligent. We got to maneuver correctly. But we're not going to get free playing the game with a white man. It ain't going to happen. And so we must begin to, again, set up black laws. You know, the Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul-Muhammad and our National Chairman, Dr. Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, they talk about that black law for black people. They talk about the difference, and we're going to go into it in a future show. God willing, they talk about the difference between white law and black law. There is a difference, family, between white law and black law. We don't got enough time to get off into it, but just let that register in your mind. Let it register in your brain that black law has to supersede white law straight up, and you have to know when to enact black law, even if there's a white law in place. We must begin to run like one nation so that when Sean Kwame comes to your city, I feel at home. When you come to my city, you feel at home. You know, wherever we at home because we one nation. Hell, it's too much that we go different places and we feel uncomfortable and feel out of place and feel like we ain't wanted or feel like, you know, we strangers and we amongst our own people. That got to stop. We got to stop with the bickering and the organizations against each other and all this type of stuff because we are helping J. Edgar Hoover's aim. We're helping his goal, and we're helping him to live on into 2010, and we are becoming and maintaining his status quo. We're maintaining his disruption, his discrediting, his false propaganda. We're maintaining all of that by our unwillingness to unite amongst ourselves and our unwillingness to do for ourselves. We're maintaining and helping J. Edgar Hoover. If you want the death and destruction of J. Edgar Hoover and COINTELPRO in 2010, be a revolutionary. Do what the Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul-Muhammad say do, and be a revolutionary in whatever field you're in. I can't name all the fields. There's too many of them. But, I mean, hell, if you're a teacher, if you're a lawyer, if you're a doctor, if you're an insurance agent, if you're a janitor, you know what I mean? If you, whatever, hell, if you, whatever, you pick trash, whatever you do, be a revolutionary at it. Make complete constructive change and touch some people's lives where you are. Start talking to black folks about doing for self. Start organizing the people where you are. Start tackling the issues in the community instead of saying, oh, it's so terrible. Oh, it's so bad. Oh, it's so irresponsible. Let's begin, if we're not now, let's begin to tackle the issues. Let's begin to move on the problems of the black community. If dope is a problem in the community, then let's begin to move on the dope trade in the community. If violence is a problem in the community, let's begin to move on the violence in the community. We can do it. We can do it. Ain't nothing new under this sun. All of this stuff, man, has happened at a different time, at a different space, just under a different name. And many of the peoples and our peoples of the past were successful and have been successful in dealing with that. And we will be successful in dealing with that if we remain strong, if we remain steadfast. And so, again, we push forward to October the 22nd. And I'm going to keep driving this home because it's important. October 22nd in New York City, we will tribute the Black Panther Party of the 1960s. And we will tribute the Black Liberation Army, that bold army that worked to free Assata Shakur and did other things. We're going to tribute them. We want you all to come. We want you all to be a part and be with us. Continue to support the New Black Panther Party. Join on and be a Panther. Be a Panther in 2010. Go on to newblackpanther.org and sign up and get busy and activate your mind process to go back to your original self and do for self and hurried to bring on the death and destruction of J. Edgar Hoover and COINTELPRO in 2010. You can email me with your questions or comments, or if you need information on how to set up a chapter in your city, at mbpphq@yahoo.com. And as always, we thank you and we look forward to hearing from you again and listening to you and talking to you one more time for Black Power Radio. And this is Sean Quali leaving you in the way that I came, leaving you with Black Power.
Yo, hip-hop started out in the heart, yo. Now everybody trying to charge, say what, hip-hop started out in the heart, yo. Now everybody trying to charge.
Come on now, baby, come on now, baby, come on now, baby, come on. Come on now, baby, come on now, baby, come on now, baby, come on.
Come on, baby, light my fire. Everything you drop is so tired.
Everything.
Music is supposed to inspire. How come we ain't getting no higher? Now tell me your philosophy.
Yeah.
On exactly what an artist should be. Should they be someone with concept of reality. Now who you know without any flow?
Who you know without any flow?
That lives above a spiritual law.
That lives above a spiritual
law. And does anything they feel just because?
Just because.
There's always someone there who'll applaud.
Yeah.
Come on, baby, lie.
Come on, baby, light my fire. lie.